Chapter 45. A Woman's Way. Haggard cliffs, of every ugly altitude, are as common as seafowl along the line of coast between Exmoor and Land's End. But this outflanked and encompassed specimen was the ugliest of them all. Their summits are not safe places for scientific experiment on the principles of air currents, as Knight had now found, to his dismay. He still clutched the face of the escarpment, not with the frenzied hold of despair, but with a dogged determination to make the most of his every jot of endurance, and so give the longest possible scope to Elfright's intentions, whatever they might be. He reclined hand in hand with the world in its infancy. Not a blade, not an insect, which spoke of the present, was between him and the past. The inveterate antagonism of these black precipices to all strugglers for life is in no way more forcibly suggested than by the paucity of tufts of grass, lichens, or confervae on their outermost ledges. Knight pondered on the meaning of Elfright's hasty disappearance, but could not avoid an instinctive conclusion that there existed but a doubtful hope for him. As far as he could judge, his sole chance of deliverance lay in the possibility of a rope or pole being brought, and this possibility was remote indeed. The soil upon these high downs was left so untended that they were unenclosed for miles, except by a casual bank or dry wall, and were rarely visited but for the purpose of collecting or counting the flock which found a scanty means of subsistence thereon. At first, when death appeared improbable, because it had never visited him before, Knight could think of no future, nor of anything connected with his past. He could only look sternly at nature's treacherous attempt to put an end to him, and strive to thwart her. From the fact that the cliff formed the inner face of the segment of a huge cylinder, having the sky for a top, and the sea for a bottom, which enclosed the cove to the extent of more than a semicircle, he could see the vertical face curving round on each side of him. He looked far down the facade, and realized more thoroughly how it threatened him. Grimness was in every feature, and to its very bowels the inimical shape was desolation. By one of those familiar conjunctions of things wherewith the inanimate world baits the mind of man, when he pauses in moments of suspense, opposite Knight's eyes was an embedded fossil, standing forth in low relief from the rock. It was a creature with eyes. The eyes, dead and turned to stone, were even now regarding him. It was one of the early crustaceans called trilobites. Separated by millions of years in their lives, Knight and this underling seemed to have met in their death. It was the single instance within reach of his vision of anything that had ever been alive, and had had a body to save, as he himself had now. The creature represented but a low type of animal existence, for never in their vernal years had the plains indicated by those numberless slaty layers been traversed by an intelligence worthy of the name. Zoophytes, mollusca, shellfish, were the highest developments of those ancient dates. The immense lapses of time each formation represented had known nothing of the dignity of man. They were grand times, but they were mean times too, and mean were their relics. He was to be with the small in his death. Knight was a geologist, and such is the supremacy of habit over occasion, as a pioneer of the thoughts of men, that at this dreadful juncture his mind found time to take in, by a momentary sweep, the varied scenes that had had their day between this creature's epoch and his own. There is no place like a cleft landscape for bringing home such imaginings as these. Time closed up like a fan before him. He saw himself at one extremity of the years, face to face with the beginning, and all the intermediate centuries simultaneously. Fierce men, clothed in the hides of beasts, and carrying, for defense and attack, huge clubs and pointed spears, rose from the rock, like the phantoms before the doomed Macbeth. They lived in hollows, woods, and mud huts, perhaps in caves of the neighboring rocks. Behind them stood an earlier band. No man was there. huge elephantine forms, the mastodon, the hippopotamus, the tapir, antelopes of monstrous size, the megatherium, and the myelodon all, for the moment, in juxtaposition. Further back, and overlapped by these, were perched huge-billed birds and swinish creatures as large as horses. Still more shadowy were the sinister crocodilian outlines, alligators and other uncouth shapes, culminating in the colossal lizard, the iguanodon. Folded behind were dragon forms and clouds of flying reptiles. Still underneath were fishy beings of lower development, and so on, till the lifetime scenes of the fossil confronting them were a present and modern condition of things. These images passed before Knight's inner eye in less than half a minute, and he was again considering the actual present. Was he to die? The mental picture of Elfride in the world, without himself to cherish her, smote his heart like a whip. He had hoped for deliverance, but what could a girl do? He dared not move an inch. Was death really stretching out his hand? The previous sensation, that it was improbable he would die, was fainter now. However, Knight still clung to the cliff. To those musing weather-beaten West Country folk who pass the greater part of their days and nights out of doors, nature seems to have moods in other than a poetical sense. Predilections for certain deeds at certain times, without any apparent law to govern, or season to account for them. She is read as a person with a curious temper, as one who does not scatter kindnesses and cruelties alternately, impartially, and in order, but heartless severities or overwhelming generosities in lawless caprice. Man's case is always that of the prodigal's favorite or the miser's pensioner. In her unfriendly moments there seems a feline fun in her tricks, begotten by a foretaste of her pleasure in swallowing the victim. Such a way of thinking had been absurd to Knight, but he began to adopt it now. He was first spitted onto a rock. New tortures followed. The rain increased, and persecuted him with an exceptional persistency which he was moved to believe owed its cause to the fact that he was in such a wretched state already. An entirely new order of things could be observed in this introduction of rain upon the scene. It rained upwards instead of down. The strong ascending air carried the raindrops with it in its race up the escarpment, coming to him with such velocity that they stuck into his flesh like cold needles. Each drop was virtually a shaft, and it pierced him to his skin. The water shafts seemed to lift him on their points. No downward rain ever had such a torturing effect. In a brief space he was drenched, except in two places. These were on the top of his shoulders, and on the crown of his hat. The wind, though not intense in other situations, was strong here. It tugged at his coat and lifted it. We are mostly accustomed to look upon all opposition which is not animate, as that of the stolid, inexorable hand of indifference, which wears out the patience more than the strength. Here, at any rate, hostility did not assume that slow and sickening form. It was a cosmic agency, active, lashing, eager for conquest. Determination, not an insensate standing in the way. Knight had overestimated the strength of his hands. They were getting weak already. She will never come again, as he has been gone 10 minutes, apostrophe he said to himself. This mistake arose from the unusual compression of his experiences just now. As he had really been gone but 3. As many more minutes will be my end, apostrophe he thought. Next came another instance of the incapacity of the mind to make comparisons at such times. This is a summer afternoon, apostrophe he said, and there can never have been such a heavy and cold rain on a summer day in my life before. Apostrophe, he was again mistaken. The rain was quite ordinary in quantity, the air in temperature. It was, as is usual, the menacing attitude in which they approached him that magnified their powers. He again looked straight downwards, the wind and the water dashes lifting his mustache, scudding up his cheeks, under his eyelids, and into his eyes. This is what he saw down there. The surface of the sea visually just past his toes, and under his feet, actually 1/8 of a mile, or more than 200 yards, below them. We color according to our moods the objects we survey. The sea would have been a deep neutral blue, had happier auspices attended the gazer. It was now no otherwise than distinctly black to his vision. That narrow white border was foam, he knew well, but its boisterous tosses were so distant as to appear a pulsation only, and its splashing was barely audible. A white border to a black sea is funeral pall and its edging. The world was to some extent turned upside down for him. Rain descended from below. Beneath his feet was aerial space and the unknown. Above him was the firm, familiar ground, and upon it all that he loved best. Pitiless nature had then two voices, and two only. The nearer was the voice of the wind in his ears rising and falling as it mauled, and thrust him harder softly. The second and distant one was the moan of that unplummeted ocean below, and afar rubbing its restless flank against the cliff without a name. Night perseveringly held fast. Had he any faith in Elfride? Perhaps. Love is faith, and faith, like a gathered flower, will ruthlessly live on. Nobody would have expected the sun to shine on such an evening as this. Yet it appeared, low down upon the sea. Not with its natural golden fringe, sweeping the furthest ends of the landscape, not with the strange glare of whiteness which it sometimes puts on as an alternative to color, but as a splotch of vermilion red upon a leaden ground, a red face looking on with a drunken leer. Most men who have brains know it, and few are so foolish as to disguise this fact from themselves or others, even though an ostentatious display may be called self-conceit. Knight, without showing it much, knew that his intellect was above the average. And he thought he could not help thinking that his death would be a deliberate loss to Earth of good material, that such an experiment in killing might have been practiced upon some less developed life. A fancy some people hold, when in a bitter mood, is that inexorable circumstance only tries to prevent what intelligence attempts. Renounce a desire for a long contested position, and go on another tack, and after a while the prize is thrown at you, seemingly in disappointment, that no more tantalizing is possible. Knight gave up thoughts of life utterly and entirely, and turned to contemplate the dark valley and the unknown future beyond. Into the shadowy depths of these speculations we will not follow him. Let it suffice to state what ensued. At that moment of taking no more thought for this life, something disturbed the outline of the bank above him. A spot appeared. It was the head of Elfride. Knight immediately prepared to welcome life again. The expression of a face consigned to utter loneliness, when a friend first looks in upon it, is moving in the extreme. In rowing seaward to a lightship or sea-girt lighthouse, where, without any immediate terror of death, the inmates experience the gloom of monotonous seclusion, the grateful eloquence of their countenances at the greeting, expressive of thankfulness for the visit, is enough to stir the emotions of the most careless observer. Knight's upward look at Elfride was of a nature with, but far transcending, such an instance as this. The lines of his face had deepened to furrows, and every one of them thanked her visibly. His lips moved to the word Elfride, apostrophe though the emotion evolved no sound. His eyes passed all description in their combination of the whole diapason of eloquence, from lover's deep love to fellow man's gratitude for a token of remembrance from one of his kind. Elfride had come back. What else he had come to do he did not know. She could only look on at his death, perhaps. Still, as he had come back, and not deserted him utterly, and it was much. It was a novelty in the extreme to see Henry Knight, to whom Elfride was but a child, who had swayed her as a tree sways a bird's nest, who mastered her, and made her weep most bitterly at her own insignificance, thus thankful for a sight of her face. She looked down upon him, her face glistening with rain and tears. He smiled faintly. How calm he is. ' she thought. How great and noble he is to be so calm. ' she would have died 10 times for him then. The gliding form of the steamboat caught her eye. She heeded it no longer. How much longer can you wait? apostrophe apostrophe came from her pale lips, and along the wind to his position. 4 minutes, apostrophe said Knight in a weaker voice than her own. But with a good hope of being saved? Apostrophe apostrophe, 7 or 8. Apostrophe apostrophe, he now noticed that in her arms she bore a bundle of white linen, and that her form was singularly attenuated. So preternaturally thin and flexible was Elfright at this moment, that she appeared to bend under the light blows of the rain shafts, as they struck into her sides and bosom, and splintered into spray on her face. There is nothing like a thorough drenching for reducing the protuberances of clothes, but Elfright seemed to cling to her like a glove. Without heeding the attack of the clouds further than, by raising her hand and wiping away the spurts of rain, when they went more particularly into her eyes, she sat down and hurriedly began rending the linen in 2 strips. These she knotted end to end, and afterwards twisted them like the strands of a cord. In a short space of time as he had formed a perfect rope by this means, 6 or 7 yards long. Can you wait while I bind it? Apostrophe apostrophe she said, anxiously extending her gaze down to him. Yes, if not very long. Hope has given me a wonderful installment of strength. Apostrophe apostrophe, Elfright dropped her eyes again, tore the remaining material into narrow tape-like ligaments, knotted each to each as before, but on a smaller scale, and wound the lengthy string as he had thus formed round and round the linen rope, which, without this binding, had a tendency to spread abroad. Now, apostrophe said Knight, who, watching the proceedings intently, had by this time, not only grasped her scheme, but reasoned further on, I can hold 3 minutes longer yet. And do you use the time in testing the strength of the knots, one by one? Apostrophe apostrophe, she at once obeyed, tested each singly by putting her foot on the Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.